Hello, and thank you for joining us for our 10th podcast. In today's episode, we're going to look at a bizarre and tragic case. In this episode, we discuss genetic genealogy, which we cover in episodes 6, 7, and 8. While it's not necessary to listen to those episodes, it may help. But without any further delay, we're going back to mid-1996. On June 13th, 1996, the number one song on the Billboard charts was Crossroads by hip-hop group Bone Thugs and Harmony. The top movie at the box office was the action thriller The Rock, starring Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery, and directed by Michael Bay. Earlier that year, Lyle and Eric Menendez were convicted of murdering their parents, and Ted Kaczynski, aka the Unabomber, was arrested after an 18-year reign of terror. At the time, 18-year-old Angie Dodge was living alone in her first apartment in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Angie was born in December 1977 in Vancouver, Washington. She had three older brothers. For a while, the Dodge family lived in San Diego, California, but when Angie was in grade school, they moved to Idaho Falls. Idaho Falls is Idaho's second largest city. In 1996, it had a population of about 47,000 people. Angie Dodge was a bright young woman. In high school, she tutored kids in math and English. After graduating from high school, Angie attended Idaho State University for a short time. In mid-June 1996, Angie was working at a beauty store in downtown Idaho Falls. When she didn't show up for work on the morning of June 13th or answer her phone, two of her co-workers went to her apartment. Angie didn't answer the door, so they let themselves into her apartment. They found evidence that Angie had to get together the night before. On the bedroom floor, next to a mattress, was the dead body of Angie Dodge. The 18-year-old had been stabbed a dozen times and her throat was slit. The medical examiner would later determine that she had been raped. A forensic expert collected what was described as a pristine sample of the killer's DNA. The police did not find any signs of a break-in or forced entry. But there was evidence that Angie fought with her killer. The police questioned several people and compared their DNA to the killer's DNA. But no arrests were made. 6 months after the murder, the police had made no progress on the case. Angie's mother, Carol Dodge, publicly criticized the police and believed they were not qualified to handle the investigation. Carol would often show up unannounced at the police station and ask for updates on the case. The detectives didn't share much information with her. They considered her a nuisance. In early 1997, something happened that caught the attention of the investigators. A man named Benjamin Hobbs had been arrested in Ely, Nevada, because he had been accused of raping a woman at knife point. Hobbs had lived in Idaho Falls, Idaho, when Angie was murdered. He was a part of a group of young people who hung out on the banks of a river not far from Angie's apartment. They were known as the River Rats. Police interviewed Hobbs, and he denied committing the murder. The police then began to interview Hobbs' friends. One of those friends was a 20-year-old man named Christopher Tapp. The police interviewed Tapp twice. During the first interview, Tapp claimed he knew nothing about the murder. In the second interview, Tapp claimed that Hobbs killed Angie, and then Hobbs asked him to provide an alibi for the time of the murder. After those two meetings, Tapp's parents hired a lawyer for him. The police came to Tapp's home to interview him for a third time. Tab's mother told the police that he would go to the station in a few days with his lawyer to answer more questions. But before Tab could voluntarily go to the police station, he was charged with being an accessory to a felony. After Tab was arrested, he told the detectives that he was with Hobbs when he killed Angie. According to Tab, Hobbs accused Angie of trying to break up his marriage, so he killed her. Christopher Tab then signed immunity agreements. In exchange for giving truthful information regarding the murder, he would be able to plead guilty to the lesser charge of aiding and abetting an aggravated battery. But there was a major problem with the case. The police had a sample of the killer's DNA, and that DNA did not belong to Benjamin Hobbs or Christopher Tab. When the detectives confronted Tab about this, they suggested that he come up with a new story. So Tab said that a third man was involved in the murder. The third man was a friend of Tab and Hobbs, and Tab said that he was the one who raped and killed Angie. The police collected the man's DNA, and it also did not match. At this point, the authorities were annoyed with Tab because they thought he was not being truthful. Since he wasn't being truthful, they revoked his immunity. On January 29, 1997, nearly 3 weeks after Tab was arrested, investigators took him to the crime scene. Tab said that he and Hobbs were there when Angie was murdered. Tab changed his story again and said that the third man wasn't their friend, but instead, it was a man he only knew as Mike, and Mike raped and murdered Angie. Tab said that during the attack, he held Angie down. A few days later, Tab took his fifth polygraph exam. He denied 8 times that he killed Angie. Then a detective told him he might not get the death penalty if the killer threatened to kill him if he didn't participate in the murder. So Tab said that he cut Angie during the murder because Hobbs had threatened to kill him. Tab passed the polygraph exam, but he apparently showed deception when he talked about the murder. On February 3, 1997, Christopher Tab was charged with first-degree murder and rape. Neither Benjamin Hobbs nor the third man were charged with murder or rape. Christopher Tab went to trial in May 1998. The prosecution presented Tab's confession as evidence of his guilt. The district attorney also had a young woman named Destiny Osborne testify. Osborne said that she overheard a conversation at a party between Tab, Benjamin Hobbs, and the third man who Tab said took part in the murder. Osborne said that during the conversation, Tab confessed to the murder. Tab's lawyer argued that anything that Tab said about the crime was coerced. Over 3 weeks, Tab had been questioned 9 times for multiple hours, and he was given 7 polygraph exams. In total, he endured over 100 hours of intense questioning by the police. Tab's lawyer also argued that no physical evidence connected him to the crime or the crime scene. In fact, based on the DNA evidence, Tab was not the killer. The jury deliberated for 13 hours. He was found guilty of first-degree murder and rape. 22-year-old Christopher Tab was looking at the death penalty for the conviction. Instead, in December 1998, he was sentenced to life with the chance of parole after 30 years. After Tab was convicted, the police said that they were going to continue to work on the case. They were convinced that 3 men had been involved in the murder and they had only caught one of them. They were sure that Benjamin Hobbs was one of the men. Hobbs was convicted of raping the woman in Nevada, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. The police were also looking for the mysterious Mike, whom they thought committed the actual murder. Carol Dodge also continued to pressure the police to find the other men who were supposedly involved in her daughter's murder. But the police made absolutely no progress in the case. In 2007, the Idaho Innocence Project took on Christopher Tapp's case. It was clear to them he had been wrongly convicted. They had reviewed videos of his police interviews. They saw that he had been coerced, and any information he knew about the murder had been fed to him by the detectives who were interviewing him. In 2009, 13 years after the murder and 11 years after Christopher Tapp was convicted, the police entered the killer's DNA into a national database. But once again, no suspect was found. Shortly afterward, a local newspaper got copies of Tapp's interviews with the police, and they gave the tapes to Angie's mother, Carol. Carol kept the recordings for several years before she watched them. She had firmly believed that Tapp was involved in the murder of her daughter. But in 2013, after reviewing the footage, Carol thought that Tapp might be innocent. She decided to contact an expert in false confessions. After reading the expert's report, Carol became convinced that Tapp was innocent. In April 2014, the killer's DNA was sent to the Sorensen Molecular Lab. The Sorensen Molecular Lab performs a bunch of different DNA testing for a variety of reasons, like criminal cases and for academic purposes. In the 2000s, it was acquired by Ancestry.com. A detective thought that by giving the DNA to the lab, they might find a family member of the killer. It was a similar process that led to the arrest of Joseph James DeAngelo, aka the Golden State Killer, years later in 2018. But the detective was not looking to do something as sophisticated as genetic genealogy. Instead, he was just hoping to find someone who was closely related to the killer. 2 months later, the detective got the results back. There were 41 men who were possibly related to the killer. One that caught his attention was a man who had 34 of the same 35 markers. The detective talked to DNA experts, and they said that person was most likely a relative of the killer. But the detective did not have access to the person's name because of Ancestry.com's privacy policies. The detective then got a subpoena, and the information was released to him. The man's name was Michael Ursary Sr., and he lived in Clinton, Mississippi. He had given his DNA to Ancestry.com through a project sponsored by the Church of Latter-day Saints. The detective then looked at Michael Sr.'s family tree. He noticed that Michael Sr. had a son, Michael Jr. Michael Jr. had been 16 at the time of Angie's murder, and he had several connections to Idaho Falls. A few years after the murders, his two sisters attended a college that was about 25 miles from Angie's apartment. Also, for a short time, Michael had lived in a small town that was about 13 miles from Idaho Falls. Michael Jr. was involved in filmmaking, and he had made two horror movies. One film depicted the murder of a young girl. Another film was described as gratuitously violent by a reporter who screened the film. But, most importantly, Christopher Tapp said that the killer's name was Mike. In December 2015, the police in New Orleans had Michael Ursary come to the police station on the pretense that they were investigating a hit and run. When Michael Jr. got to the police station, he was shocked to learn that he was a suspect in the murder. He gave the police a sample of his DNA. A month later, in mid-January 2016, Michael Jr. learned that he was cleared as a suspect because his DNA did not match the killer's DNA. Many people criticized the Idaho Police Department for using the Ancestry.com database to generate leads. They considered it unethical and a breach of privacy. But has this really Orwellian state feeling to it? It is a huge indictment of private genetic testing companies and the degree to which people seamlessly share that information online. But is this really Orwellian state feeling to it? It has a huge indictment of private genetic testing companies and the degree to which people seemingly share that information online. Needless to say, the police were back at square one. Christopher Tapp continued to sit in prison, even though many people, including Harold Dodge, believed he was innocent. In May 2016, Tapp's lawyers filed an appeal saying that his confession was coerced, and the videos of the polygraph examinations had not been given to his defense lawyer. Also, several elements of Tapp's confession did not fit the timeline. Tapp told the police that the murder happened at about 1 a.m. But Angie had friends over that night, and the last one left at 12:30 a.m. When Angie was murdered, her bladder was full, so this indicates that she had probably been asleep for some time before she was murdered. Meaning, she was probably killed several hours after everyone left her apartment. The appeal was never ruled upon. Instead, on March 22, 2017, the district attorney, Danny Clark, and Tapp's lawyer reached a plea agreement. Clark vacated the rape charge and reduced the sentence on the murder charge to time served. Clark said that he was not conceding that Tapp was innocent or wrongly convicted. He said, "Anyone who says the evidence proves Tapp is innocent is operating from a biased agenda or his or her own personal belief." Tapp was subsequently released after serving 21 years of prison. The first thing Tapp did was go out for a steak dinner with his mother. The problem was that in prison, he never used metal utensils, so he had to relearn how to use them while reporters watched him. Tapp found life on the outside to be quite different than when he went into prison. Tapp was 22 when he was incarcerated, and he still felt about that age, when in reality, he was actually 43. While he was locked up, his friends had all moved on with their lives. They got married, had kids, and bought houses. Tapp also had to get used to how much people use their cell phones to communicate instead of physically talking to each other. In June 2017, Christopher Tapp got engaged to a school teacher, and they were married shortly afterward. Also in 2017, one of the key witnesses at Tapp's trial, Destiny Osborne, admitted that she had lied about hearing Tapp talk to Benjamin Hobbs about the murder. She said that she didn't even know Hobbs. She said that the police had fed her the information and threatened to arrest her on drug charges if she didn't cooperate. Carol Dodge still wanted justice for her daughter. In summer 2017, the Idaho Police Department hired a new police chief. Carol asked him to look into Angie's case, and he agreed. The police then teamed up with C.C. Moore, a famous genetic genealogist. In 2018, Moore became the chief genetic genealogist with the DNA technology company Parabon Nanolabs. Moore had studied and worked in the arts and marketing. She became interested in genealogy in 2003. Before joining Parabon Nanolabs, Moore had pioneered many techniques that are used in genetic genealogy. Since then, she's been a guest on many shows like Finding Your Roots and 2020. In the summer of 2018, Moore uploaded Angie's Killer's DNA profile to GEDmatch, which is a public DNA database. Moore's search was more methodical than the original familial DNA search that led to Michael Ursary Jr. It turned out that Michael Jr.'s father was related within 3 or 4 generations of the killer. Moore determined that the killer was the grandson or great-grandson of a man named Clarence Ussery. Clarence and Michael Jr.'s last name are remarkably similar, but they are spelled differently. Clarence spelled his name U-S-S-E-R-Y, and Michael Jr. spells his name U-S-R-Y. Since they are so similar, they are probably 2 versions of the same family name. C.C. Moore narrowed it down to 6 possible men. One of those men lived in Idaho. So Moore requested that the police trail the man and get a sample of his DNA. They did, and they managed to collect a sample of the man's DNA. But it turned out that was not a match. Not only that, but the testing excluded his entire family and the other 5 men on the list. Moore said, "It was devastating. I had hit a brick wall. It appeared that genetic genealogy might have led me wrong for the first time in my career." After hearing the news, Carol Dodge was distraught. One night, at 3 a.m., she sat at her kitchen table and sobbed. But then she felt her daughter communicating with her. She told her that she had come so far and that there was only a little bit more to go. C.C. Moore went back to work looking for something she may have missed. She saw one possibility. There was a record of a short marriage that had no reports of any child being born as a result of the marriage. The problem was that Moore didn't know what happened to the woman after she left the marriage. An assistant of Moore's managed to dig up some information about the woman in a library in Missouri. The assistant found the woman's mother's obituary. It turned out that the marriage had produced a son, but the son took on his stepfather's last name. His full name was Brian Lee Dripps. Moore looked into Dripps' records and learned that in 1996, he was living in Idaho Falls, Idaho. In fact, he lived across the street from Angie at the time of the murder. Dripps had been questioned in a canvass of the neighborhood 5 days after the murder. But he had never been considered a person of interest. The police learned that in May 2019, Dripps was living in Caldwell, Idaho. The police started trailing him, and they collected a cigarette butt he discarded. The DNA was then compared to the killer's DNA. It was a match. On May 15, 2019, 53-year-old Brian Dripps was arrested for the murder of 18-year-old Angie Dodge. In custody, Dripps confessed to raping and murdering Angie. Dripps was 30 years old at the time of the murder. Dripps said that he went over to Angie's apartment with a knife. Dripps claims that when he went to her apartment, he had only planned on raping her and he did not intend to kill her. He also said that he acted alone. At the time of the murder, Dripps was married and his wife was pregnant with their first child. He and Angie were acquaintances. Dripps' wife went on to have 2 more children with him. Dripps' wife said that he was a violent drug abuser and she eventually left him and got remarried. Dripps did have a criminal record, but his conviction was related to drugs. Dripps grew up in Missouri, and besides Idaho, he had lived in California and Washington. It's not clear what Dripps did for work. Several months after Dripps was arrested, in July 2019, Christopher Tapp was exonerated. In December 2019, Tapp sued the Idaho Police Department for an unspecified amount. In February 2021, 55-year-old Brian Tripps pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and rape. He said that he was drunk and high on cocaine at the time of the murder. He claimed that he remembered the rape, but he did not remember killing Angie. As part of his plea agreement for pleading guilty, it's recommended that he be sentenced to life in prison with a chance of parole after 20 years. Angie Dodge's mother was happy that the case was finally solved after 23 years, but she knew it would never bring her daughter back. She was also furious that the detectives missed the suspect who was right under their noses. Christopher Tapp is the first person to be exonerated thanks to genetic genealogy. The current status of his lawsuit is not known. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Our producer and sound designer is Danelle Cloutier. You can find a link to her Instagram in the description box. If you just discovered our podcast, you should check out our YouTube channel, Criminally Listed. We have over 250 videos featuring some riveting and chilling true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow or subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In next week's episode, we're going to take a look at a brutal mass murder that was committed in 2003. The only thing that might be more shocking than the crime is how it was solved. It's a truly bizarre case, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it. But thanks again for listening, take care, and stay safe.